Carpenter to you also.
Hare Krishna. So we had very eventful days up till now in our retreat, days where we have presented many subjects, where we have thought about many ideas, where we have tried new concepts, where we have allowed ourselves to be vulnerable in some senses. I mean, we did something where also our weaknesses came forward, our personal struggles, the obstacles which on our path became visible. So we have now reserved this period of the Japa retreat to deal with these new concepts, where we might like to ask questions, to deal with the obstacles, where we might like to have help or new insights. I request you to address these questions to us, and then between Giriraj Maharaj and myself, we will do our best to answer the questions. We will be in a tandem. That means when you drive tandem, means two people on one bicycle. We will see what curve Giriraj Maharaj takes, what incline I will be responsible for, to give a little bit more input. So please do ask your questions, and we will see between the two of us who will answer the questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should I call upon them, or would you like to do this? Or let's do it simple, isn't it? I saw our Mataji first. Jai Shri, yes.
You can begin. I think
okay.
I think many questions, we can both say something.
Yeah. Okay. Japa is defined by Rupa Goswami as saying a mantra very softly so that only you can hear. Kirtan is singing the names. It can be the same mantra, or it can be the names of Krishna, so that others can hear. It's a glorification. And Sankirtan is defined in Bhakti Sandarbha as when many people come together sing the holy names together. So you can do Kirtan alone, but Sankirtan is when many people come together. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also mentioned that Sankirtan means the complete glorification of Lord Krishna. Complete means with his name, his forms, his attributes, his pastimes, and so on. So, what is the benefit, you have asked, from doing this, from doing these practices? All are a little different from each other. That means all are special and specific in their own ways. So at the same time, and this is now something where I personally did a lot of research on, at the same time, it's always stated that the prime means in Kali Yuga is kirtan, not japa. This is not a japa movement, it's a kirtan movement. Now, when you, this is at first perplexing. What? Prabhupada said, of all the instructions of the spiritual master to chant 16 rounds without offenses is the most important. So it seems we are very much a japa movement. But now listen very carefully. This will challenge what you know up till now. The way we chant is really very much kirtan, nam kirtan. We don't. We have learned from Prabhupada introducing the japa, and he chants Hare Krishna Krishna. This would be typically kirtan. When we do japa, we will go. We don't hear this so often. We see Prabhupada chanting very softly his japa, but we see him also chanting loudly his japa. And it's very interesting for me to notice, when you read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita how Namacharya Haridas Thakur did his glorification of the holy name, if you read that, because he's Namacharya, I mean, he is the one whom Mahaprabhu picked as the Acharya of chanting the name. Krishnadas Kaviraj always says he did Nam Kirtan. In the Bengali, you hear it's Nam Kirtan. So, we know he has his japa mala and he chanted Nam Kirtan. Means it's a little bit loudish. Loud and loudish, I think, is a new word in English. It's a little loudish. Yes. So the main benefit you can really derive from the holy name when you do kirtan with it. What does kirtan mean from the pure etymological understanding? There's a word kirt, and kirt means to glorify someone. When you chant Hare Krishna, when you do japa, this is so important. The idea is you glorify Krishna. It's a relationship. It's addressing Krishna. And that is the idea of kirtan. The idea of glorification, the Naam Kirtan. No, no, I have finished, but you may do what you...
I wanted to add something, but I wanted to subtract something first.
From your body. So please subtract something. Subtraction. What a nice usage of the English language. So, good. So let us hear now the next questions. Wow, so many of you. This is overwhelmingly. I saw first Dayal Chetan, Dayal Goranga. My name is Dulal Chandra. Dulal Chandra. This is a bad habit. I always give names. Yeah.
Haridas Thakur mentions he started in his mind in the morning,
yeah,
and then progressed in the volume throughout the day.
I also heard in Prema Vilas that there were three modi of chanting in the mind, then he was whispering, and then he was chanting loud. And in Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's even, we find the Thakur dancing at the bank of the river Ganga. He seems to really have danced also at times, and his colors changed as ecstatic symptoms swarmed all over his body. Yes, so yes, there were the three modi of chanting japa. Yes, of chanting. Let us say chanting. Chanting can mean japa, and it can mean kirtan. My explanation of this is that in all cases, it's always addressing Krishna and praising him. Whatever you do, either in the mind, I have heard some scholars say that even in the mind you can do kirtan. Glorifying, in the sense of glorifying Krishna. See, we in ISKCON have a very specific use of termina, which our movement has developed in as it progressed. This is all I can say, but I'm not sure if I have addressed your... Have I addressed what you said? Are you satisfied? Or yeah good.
It seems that being Navacharya, he performed all.
All, yes, yes. Yeah, yes. Yes. Let us imagine we would have met Haridas Thakur. That would have been an experience. Good. Oh, yeah? Done, yes. Giriyash Maharaj, you wanted to add something?
Just a couple of small points. One devotee wrote Srila Prabhupada asking about japa and kirtan.
Oh, good.
And Srila Prabhupada wrote back that both are the same, chanting the holy name. But in kirtan, others get the benefit of hearing it, and therefore kirtan is better. Mm-hmm. But considering what you said earlier, when we chant loud enough for others to hear, that does come in the category of kirtan, even though it's done as japa.
Mm-hmm. That is very, very... would you be... Is it available in writing, or is it just...
Yes, I didn't give all the details, but I think it was around 1968 or 69. Mm-hmm. I believe Jadarani was the one who wrote the letter.
Wonderful.
And I've seen the letter. Mm-hmm. 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 Another, just to elaborate a little, bringing in japa kirtan and sankirtan. Oh, yes.
We have Mother Indrani, who is 84 years old. Almost. I'm sorry. Yes. 83. Yeah. So she requires some volume. Yes.
His Holiness Indra Dumya Swami has commented that chanting alone is perfect. Chanting with other devotees is more perfect. And chanting with other devotees in public is most perfect. Now, sometimes we speak of Sankirtan in relation to reaching out to new people. And that is especially pleasing to Krishna, as we know. And the whole purpose of whatever we do, and beginning from chanting the holy name, is to please Krishna. And I've, again, it's a little subjective, but I've experienced festivals where there's a lot of chanting of the holy name, and I've experienced, mercy in the course of chanting. And I always felt that part of the mercy came from chanting, especially hour after hour. But part of the mercy also came because Krishna was pleased. Of course, he's pleased even if it's just us and our japa beads. He's pleased that we're spending time with him. We want to deepen our relationship with him. He's pleased. But he's especially pleased when we chant not only for our own benefit, but to bring other souls to him. And so, yeah, his pleasure means we experience his mercy. So just a couple of reflections on it.
Okay. So the next person, I would say, is Jairadhe, but maybe the tendency is to overlook people. Could you, who had their hands up? Please then, okay, so Jairadhe, then Krishna Priya, then Mahamaya, then Avamadati. Oh, do you have the famous Mahara? I'm very honest to know. The mother Indrani was there with her hand. Then Avadutta, right? Advaita. Yeah. So let us go, and then our Mataji. Good name? Shyamasaki. So Shyamala Saki. Good. So please keep in mind when it's your turn, because the problem is that I might forget to call upon you, and that you will be frustrated and throw tomatoes at me. So please, when the one who's before you is finished, then you do. Okay. So who was the next one? Jairadhe.
I mean, they think that the reason I look to you is because I don't know the answer. And they're right. But I can repeat things that I've heard from Srila Prabhupada on the subjects.
And I must say, whenever a question comes, which is a very good question, like Jairadhe has said, where you need to really understand the mind of Prabhupada, then I very much like to hear Giriraj Maharaj, because let us not forget, he was very much together with Prabhupada. I was not so often together, and therefore this is a great question for you. I think it's very good. How did Prabhupada, I'm sometimes asking myself also the question that how did Prabhupada view this standard of 16 rounds for his disciples, because we really know that many, many, many don't reach that standard. And also I have become aware, Giriraj Maharaj, that many of the devotees who come to the japa retreats, I mean, this may be an exception because this is level 3, but most of them desperately hope that they get again the strength to chant their 16 rounds. They are not chanting 16 rounds usually. I have noticed, especially in America, I've noticed this. And they, America is always 10 years ahead of Europe because the movement started here. So what did Prabhupada think about this? Or she asked, is there a place for them?
He was building an army, so the necessity was there to get an army of soldiers ready. But I'm just wondering if he ever mentioned like the future or later on if there would be difficulties and would there be a place for people who couldn't set a monastic like standard.
I think there's two different questions here. Srila Prabhupada definitely wanted to engage everyone, whether they could chant 16 rounds or not. In Mayapur, he invited local residents to come and join and work in the fields, and we would maintain them. And all he really asked of them was that they work hard, you know, they work sincerely, and join the kirtan in the temple. He didn't require that they chant 16 rounds. Another story, not as direct as that, but 1 year during the Mayapur festival, Srila Prabhupada received news that the municipality of Bombay had refused to give us permission for the temple. And he was very upset, and he wanted all the devotees who'd come to India for the festival to come to Bombay and protest. But he was very concerned that the devotees should be fully engaged. He was always concerned. So he said that they should meet in the temple, a small temple we had then, and just alternate doing kirtan and speaking about Krishna. And, you know, because there were only some programs for all the devotees, and the others, he wanted them to be engaged like that. So after a few days, he asked Tamal Krishna Goswami how it was going. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, well, frankly speaking, Srila Prabhupada, a lot of the devotees tend to fall asleep during the programs. So Srila Prabhupada replied, well, that's all right. You know, if they're not... I mean, these are Prabhupada's words. We could express it in other terms, but he said, that's all right. If they're not Brahmins, that's okay. They can work in the garden, but everyone must be engaged. So the similarity between this incident and the other instruction that he gave in Mayapur is that Prabhupada wanted everyone to be fully engaged in Krishna's service. But different people have different natures, different propensities, different capacities to serve in different ways. And he didn't reject anyone because they weren't able to chant 16 rounds or they weren't brahminical. That said, if someone did vow to chant 16 rounds, he took it very seriously that they should. And I remember one morning walk in Hyderabad, Pancha Dravida Swami was telling him about a devotee who had a job in a factory. And he just couldn't chant 16 rounds. You know, he would just be, he'd have to go to work so early in the morning, and then when he came home, he was so tired and miserable. He just couldn't chant. And Pancha Dravida asked Prabhupada, and Prabhupada replied, oh, can't chant 16 rounds? He's an animal. Now, this is a strong statement. And I've contemplated it. But it's in the description of civilized human being, whatever, practically whatever varna and ashram you're in, the ability to keep one's word or promise is part of being a civilized human being. And, you know, Prabhupada often said human life begins with dharma, varnashram dharma, dharmena hina pasubhi samana. So, that said, Srila Prabhupada was very merciful. And even if devotees fell from the standard, he didn't reject them. But he also didn't, alter the standard. But he didn't reject them. He encouraged them to do whatever they could. I remember once one of the leaders, I mean, one of the biggest leaders in the whole movement, was not chanting 16 rounds. And another devotee sort of criticized him to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada replied, you know, he's doing so much more service than you'll ever do. Don't criticize. Doesn't mean that he condoned it, but he didn't like the attitude. So I think Prabhupada wanted that mood in ISKCON, that we appreciate everyone, whatever they can do, and we shouldn't discourage anyone. And it's some things are just sort of between you and Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. And, you know, if we can actually encourage someone to gradually come back to the standard, and whatever a person's history is, I always take it, we just start from where they are. And if they've stopped chanting, let them chant one round a day, or two rounds a day, and then gradually increase as if they were new people. But, you know, it's extremely damaging and harmful, I'm sure you know, to be critical of devotees. And I think we should not correct devotees or instruct them unless we feel that there's a chance that they'll receive it well. And a lot of older devotees, they know they should chant 16 rounds. They know they should follow the four principles. We don't have to tell them. They already feel bad that they're not doing it. And if we go on reminding them, we just make them feel worse. And I discussed this once with Radhanath Swami. And he said that once someone has sort of fallen from the standard, it's very hard for them to come back to the standard. And you can't really preach to them because they already know what the standard is. So he said the best you can do for them in most cases is just encourage them, remember all the wonderful service they've done, and appreciate them, so they want to associate with devotees more. And then by association, they can gradually improve. But he said with the devotees who are at the standard, he preaches very strongly to them so they don't fall from the standard and come to the position where you can't really preach to them. And in his classes, he's always emphasizes, you know, the 16 rounds, regulated principles, don't commit offenses, serve devotees, appreciate devotees. So you have to be very sensitive to our audience and just say what will help them.
I have thought about this question very deeply, and there are, for me, the question is what circumstances we have to establish or help people establish in their lives so that it's easy for them to chant 16 rounds, and they naturally like to do it. I think the reason why someone stops to chant 16 rounds or feels it difficult to chant 16 rounds even after having taken vows is that their life is just so different, I would say. There is so much material exposure to at work, in their free time, they may read and read modern literature and see modern novels, or they might spend time at the internet and the TV and so on. And then you could say the vibration in their lives is really a low frequency or material vibration, and then they find more attracted to spend that time in other ways than just doing such a highly devotional activity as chanting. So I believe very strongly in that our movement does need to create a culture which support an attractive culture which supports chanting. Otherwise, if we remain lacking of that culture, many people will have great difficulties in the future to chant that number throughout their lives. See, something which I have studied is that in the beginning, when someone comes to Krishna conscious, he has only one question: how can I make spiritual advancement? And for this type of question, 16 rounds is easily feasible when you have this. But I have noted in the course of the life of most of our devotees who marry, other questions become, how can I make enough money to support myself? It's a whole different mental orientation. You know, how can I take care of my children that they get a decent education and so on in a dharmic way? You know? And then their whole, let us call it by the old hippie language, the whole vibration changes, you know. So I really feel that during the course of a person's life who joins in Krishna consciousness, we need to see that their vibration remains like this. See, we sannyasis, for us it's so easy to keep the spiritual vibration and read only the spiritual literature. We get fed and paid, you know, our life is simple in comparison to the struggling person. Of course, I want to say, we sannyasis are aware, we need to do our austerities in preaching and in service. So I don't think any one of us lives a leisurely life. But for what I want to say, it's easy. We live in that vibration, you know. We only read this because we have to give lectures. We write about this because we have disciples and people who expect this of us. We are dressed like this because we don't have any pants, you know, and so on. We are all in this vibration. It's not difficult. It's really glorious. We live a very easy life, so to say. We make it difficult for us because we want to reach high goals. I mean, but really we live a blessed life. But what is with the majority? This is what I think, who don't live in this vibration. And the task of our of us is to give them a culture, something which nourishes them so that it's easy to do the practice. You know, that is a culture which we, all of us have to take care of, and I think as our movement goes into old age, I mean, goes into, it's no longer so young, we really have to see that there is a culture which supports that. I think all of us, all of you here, have to take care of that. And in your own lives, I would see, live a balanced life where you are emotionally and socially satisfied, but in a way satisfied that you are in that vibration to live a spiritual life and so on. Yeah. That is what I would contribute to this question. Thank you. It's a very good question. These are, I don't think we should call them challenging question, or what did you say, controversial question. I think these are very important questions to think, how will it work, you know, how can it work? I think these are glorious questions. Please don't feel hesitant to ask these questions. These are the real questions because we look for solutions. We had a list. Who's next on the list, please? Krishna Priya.
Of Acharya's songs, that one should develop humility, and at the same time, how do we distinguish between healthy recognition and spiritual lamentation from developing unhealthy self-negativity and lamentation, which doesn't lead to progressive spiritual growth, but instead a person becomes overwhelmed with their anarthas, overwhelmed with their lack of spiritual advancement.
I will answer this question very briefly by quoting Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. Don't think less of yourself, but think of yourself less. I think that is the answer. Don't go into self-absorption. That is a difficult thing. You will open a Pandora box. Always there will be weaknesses jumping into your face. But think of yourself less. Think more of Krishna and of helping others. That's how I would say. Mm.
Could you repeat the question into the microphone
so that everyone that it gets recorded? Mm-hmm. Okay, I will do. Would you like to contribute?
Well, the question was that when we do exercises like we did yesterday, observing Mona Vrat and chanting extra rounds, we become introspective and we confront things within ourselves that are not so pretty. So, you know, we know from our philosophy and the songs of the Vaishnavacharyas that there can be, you know, spiritual humility and lamentation. But then again, there could also be, lack of self-esteem and discouragement. So how do we distinguish between the two? And you replied very simply by quoting Bhaktitirtha Swami, that humility doesn't mean thinking less of yourself, but it means thinking of yourself less. Being someone who thinks about myself a lot, I could elaborate.
please.
We want to become pure devotees. We want to do everything we do purely. Even if, you know, the activity by definition is accommodated in devotional service, but the motivation may not be completely pure. And sometimes when we engage in service, we have great enthusiasm, and we don't pay so much attention to the little contamination that may be there, and we have faith that by chanting and serving, the contamination will be washed away by the process of devotional service. But sometimes the contamination is magnified in our consciousness, and that could serve two purposes or have two effects. One could be positive. We say, oh, this contamination is there. I should be conscious of it. I'm doing it to please Guru and Krishna. But at the same time, I'm also doing it because I want people to like me. Or I'm afraid if I don't do it, people will punish me, or other secondary motivations. And sometimes the secondary motivations, or what should be the secondary motivations, become very prominent in our minds. So that can serve a positive function, because we become aware of our contamination and can try to purify ourselves of it, and at the same time become detached from it so we're not impelled by it. But at the same time, it could be like that. We just, oh my God, how am I ever going to make it? I mean, it's like hopeless. Then it becomes counterproductive. And then we just sort of have to shrug it off. Just shrug it off and move ahead. I mean, I've also considered these things. I mean, there are things in my subtle body that I wish weren't there. And, you know, chanting helps. Chanting definitely helps, but still they're there. And, so sometimes I work on them, and sometimes I think, well, you know, just got to keep forging ahead. You know, whether they're there or not, just got to keep forging ahead. It's like someone has a limp. You know, it's not going to go away. But you can't just, you don't give up, you just keep limping along, and eventually you'll make it. So, you know, we have things in our subtle bodies that sort of make us limp along, but we just keep going and eventually we'll make it. It may not be as easy or as pleasurable, but we'll make it and we just keep going.
The idea of an observer role is given in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Oh, first, the question. The question we have heard about observing ourselves, but we have also heard about observing that which observes. Is there an, could you explain more about it? Well, let us start with a simple observer position, how to assume it. In the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verse 8 to 9, it says that a self-realized soul knows that by taking things, giving things away, walking, eating, sleeping, etc., he himself is not actually doing anything at all, but it is just the material body which is in relationship to the material senses. So here we find that a self-realized soul observes that this all goes on in his body, but he himself remains neutral in a distanced observer position. So now, when we do doing the japa retreat, this japa retreat, we have worked with one technique where we are going into this observer position. We are watching how we breathe in and out, just like it is there in the Bhagavad Gita shloka, where the self-realized soul observes all this. Now, this could be, who is observing this? Well, to be very blunt with you, it's your material mind who is observing how your body breathes, how the lungs fill with air and move out. It's not yet something spiritual. It's not a spiritual position which you take here. You just come to the platform of the mind and exercise the mind. So by saying, observe that which observes, you're actually telling yourself to move one step back from the mind. Now, according to your level of advancement, you will at that time arrive. When you step back from the mind, you will arrive on the level of buddhi. It's not yet the soul also. Spiritual life or the soul life is not so easy. But at least the buddhi is very close to the soul. And if you are a little bit more purified, if your soul is a little bit more purified, you come very close to a spiritual position. this exercise is not about doing, it's about being or aspiring to be what you are, that is in the eternal soul, to come as close as possible to this position. The reason why we have done this exercise is because all genuine spiritual life starts really from the understanding I'm the soul and not the body. No. I think it's very important in my spiritual life, it's very important for me to be perfectly disciplined with my realizations. A lot of what I think is a realization is just a nice pious thought in the mind. It's not spiritual. It's informed by the desire to make spiritual advancement. But unless I purify myself and unless I distance myself from the body and the mind, I will only be living in a hallucinatory spiritual life, but not the real thing. So this is the idea of this exercise. It is an exercise, and as all exercises, it brings you, you have to do it a few times. You have to exercise it like you do exercises with your muscles until you are more strong and the atrophied muscles begin to jump back into action. So most of us are on the physical or the mental platform in as we, you know, the neophyte devotee, when he eats a nice cream cheese, he would say, now I tasted the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. When he's a little older and he has heard a lot of philosophy, when he has defeated someone in a philosophical argument and thinks he knows the philosophy quite well, he says, that's ecstasy. You know, and as he advances more, he will understand that was just material consciousness where I was operating up till now, and he aspires for a true, genuine spiritual life. This is what I wish to say. Who's the next? Mahara. You say Maha, but I know you as Mahara. You are internationally famous as a Sankirtan. But Mahara, isn't it? Mahara, yeah. Sorry? But was a Sankirtan lady, isn't it? Book distribution, isn't it? Yes, we know in Europe. We know. Yes, Mahara. How old are your children?
I have one left that's 15.
Oh yeah. How many children?
I have two, and I have one that died.
So one adopted?
One that died.
I
was going to tell that story, but I...
Yeah, good. Yes. You're looking at me and I look at you. How to increase? Maybe should I say something first and then you? Yes. I so much believe in a supportive culture. When you do your household chores, maybe you do put on CDs of your favorite kirtans and you sing along. And you have in your house an overall spiritual vibration by music and so on. And then out of this culture, then spiritual practice can grow very, very easily. See, spiritual practice needs to be nourished. That's very important. Let us never underestimate the power of a nourishing life. And if we want to increase the culture. See, we live in the Gorabavan outside of Berlin, and vegetables are so expensive in Germany. We started to dig up part of the lawn with the permission of the person who rented this to us, and we planted zucchinis and zucchinis, yes. And what is it, the round thing? The pumpkins. And it was going quite well, but not fully satisfactory. Then the one who rents us our place said, "Would you like to have some good earth? It costs 70 euros. And one of our members in our small community said, 70 euros, oh, so much, you know. But then another person said, of course we have to buy this good earth, because if we have good earth, we will have much more richer vegetables, much more, zucchinis, no? Zucchinis and pumpkins and everything, strawberries, lettuce and everything. We will have much more of it. And in this way we save money." We discussed this, and we all agreed that person has a more correct vision. Vegetables grow in a certain culture. And if you strengthen the culture, the vegetables become more succulent and more fresh and juicy, and you save a lot of Lakshmi. So I sometimes think in our uncultured movement, or in our movement which doesn't have so much a culture, but just a spiritual practice, you know, we wonder why our spiritual practice seems to be in jeopardy for many of our devotees, or why it can't be increased. And I think it's because we are penny wise, pound foolish. We don't bring good earth, that which surrounds and nourishes the Bhakti Lata beach. Good earth, you know, when we speak of culture, first important thing is good association. You need good association, and I mean meaningful association where good discussions can take place. Culture means the habits which you have in your life. There should be things like sitting down for kirtan from time to time and engaging in the most important practice. Culture means also what we read, what we hear, what we eat, our association, and so on. It's a huge complex, and believe me, I owe whatever little spiritual life I have to the fact that it became very important for me to take care of the culture, because I have one problem. I'm extremely creative and curious about everything. And I need to have spiritual things which, you know, my servants know. If I don't get a spiritual book, I will just jump on any book, on Tolstoy, you know. If I don't get spiritual music, I will get a hold of classical music, you know, and so on. If I don't, I really know that if I don't have something satisfying and nourishing for my intellectual life and my emotional life, then it will not be so good. I sometimes will tell you how important culture is. I go purposefully once a year to absorb myself only in spiritual culture and in spiritual books. Govinda, you know, the books in our tradition. This is my Vrindavan month. It's actually 2 months out of a year. So then I have a very thoughtful friend. His name is Burijan Prabhu. Then I go to Burijan and says, I only read Bhagavatam. I only thought about Krishna. All what came out of my mouth was Hare Krishna. Now I will never again read any interesting article in literature. Then he says, wait a minute, you have to read this one book, the Enneagram. Then you will understand how your personality works. And then I'm going, don't tempt me. No, this is the last temptation, he says. No. And I'm back in the West. What was the title, Burijan Prabhu, which you recommended? And then when Gaura Hari doesn't see, then I read the Enneagram. and so on. So I know. And when it's the Enneagram, then comes the next thing, you know. And by the way, a preacher needs to know the newest movie. Yes, what is the newest movie which a preacher needs to know? I readily see it, you know. And after some time, you notice, if I don't put on the brakes now, I will lose the desire to chant extra rounds. I will lose the desire to read only spiritual literature. So I have seen in my own life, you've now seen the dark shadow of Sachinandan Swami. He read the Enneagram, you know, and he looked at the Gandhi movie, you know, and so on. Yes, that dark side is also there. It's not really like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's not like that. It's only that. But I know how difficult it is. So if you want to increase your spiritual culture, what I do is I put loud kirtan in the house. Anyways, my life is so easy. I work from morning till evening. I write when I'm not traveling, spiritual things, and there's only, don't worry, I'm a good boy. I just gave an example so that you can understand how important culture is. And when you don't do this, when you are careless, and if you, no matter if you are an old Sankirtan devotee, glorious in the world of Sankirtaneros, if you are not careful to take care of the culture, to surround yourself with good earth, then your bhakti plant will not get so much nourishment. It's just not there, and it will be mediocre in its life. That would be one answer. Giriraj Maharaj, would you like to say something on this question, how to increase the number of rounds?
What I was going to suggest is to take some time, and it can very easily be related to the culture, to chant extra rounds. In other words, whatever, it could be, say, every Sunday. And then on Sunday morning, you go to Mangalarti, you chant your rounds with the devotees in the temple. You don't leave the temple room until noon. That's one example. Or once in a month or once in 3 months, go somewhere where the atmosphere will be supportive, and increase the rounds. Yogi Purush Prabhu is not here because you mentioned your daughter. Son? Oh, sorry. Mentioned your son. You know, 15 years old, he can understand things. So you could explain that, you know, you need this for your spiritual life. You know, you love him, you care for him, you want to do everything for him that he needs, but you also need this for your spiritual life, and you'll be a better mother and a better devotee and a better human being if you're able to do this. And may, you know, I don't know what he's like. Maybe I'll invite him to join you for it. And, you know, make it, make some arrangements to do extra on occasion, and then gradually it could extend beyond the special occasions.
Yes. Who is the next devotee with the next question? By the way, you look very healthy, Mother Indrani. I think you will be outliving many of us. Yes. See, there is a part of our, there is something which we like to present to the public. Especially in our community, there is a way in which we are expected to behave, and we like to also show that because we want to be recognized by our community. But this is Sachinandan Swami number one. You know, the Swami with the person you see, with a smile, with the well thought out plans, lectures, with the good person who sits there, chants very concentrated. But then there is Sachinandan Swami number two. That you will see behind closed doors. You know, he may not be so exemplary. He may sit in a very relaxed way. His legs go all over the room, he may not talk so elegantly, but he may severely criticize that one temple president from the country ABC, he may all of a sudden turn out, my God, this Swami is a fault finder. See how he's criticizing others. This is number two, the version number two of Sachinandan Swami. So we all have this. We have a picture, we have a facade which is publicly presentable. But then we have another side to us, which is just as much belonging to us as the facade which we played to the outside. It's sometimes more us, you know. It's more. It's more belongs more. I know in a, you know, the Kami say, you know, there was your President Bush. You know, I shouldn't say your president. I think no one identifies with him. But he got this, you know, he looks publicly presentable, but then he spoke a remark and it was picked up by the microphone about some person, and it was such an obscene word, you know, which he used. President Bush number two was speaking, you know, and it there was a scandal because somehow he thought the microphone was like this, switched off, but it was still on, you know, and it picked it up. I sometimes think if Manu would invent a loudspeaker which is hooked up to my brain and you would hear all of my thoughts throughout the day, you would think I'm not listening to this schizophrenic man who is paranoid, schizophrenic. Thank you. Oh yeah, okay. Schizophrenic, yes. So that was being number two. So we all have these two sides. I spared you. I did not give examples by putting my laser mind on one of your lives and so on. But we all have this. They are called. Let me say. No, it's a little different concept, a conditioned self and a constitutional self. But we are divided between these two things. The person who we know we should be and we want to be, but the person who is nourished by long indulgence in this material world, that person who has all these attachments which we don't really want to have, but it's still there and it's working. So you are now speaking about, you are now thinking, am I in trouble from this person? I would answer, if you take shelter at Krishna's lotus feet, you're not in trouble. By Krishna's mercy, that number two can become purified and can become a servant of the number one. But you need the strength of Krishna to help you. That shadowy person, which is still looming in our personality, which supplies us with most embarrassing dreams during the night, you know, needs to be purified and needs to be made a friend. And that is possible only with Krishna's help. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays so nice, "O Gopinath, my mind and my senses are not under my full control. My mind despises spiritual authority." Doesn't like to hear that. But, Gopinath, Tumi Hrishikesha, you are the Lord of the senses, which includes the mind. Please take care of me. You know. So another thing which I want to say is, again and again, I come back to this quotation which Giriraj Maharaj sent me over the computer, where it's from the fourth text, number four of the Nectar of Instruction, where Srila Prabhupada says, desires can be transformed by good association. Also the desire of number two, Indrani number two, you know, that embarrassing desires or not helpful desires can be transformed by good association. 100%. In this lifetime, by Krishna's mercy, you pray to Krishna, and by good association. Thank you, Mother Indrani. I must thank you, Indrani. You have really, I mean, an 84-year-old. 83, I'm sorry. Oh, a lady, you cannot. For men, it's a compliment when it's he's a little older, yes. 83, yes. 83, I'm sorry. 83-year-old. She's 83-year-old.
She doesn't look that old.
No. No. Just the elderly body, yes. Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Mother Indrani. Girish Maharaj, you want this?
Well, I'm glad she brought that up because I also had a question about that. Because when you presented it on the first night, one example you gave of the number two in the divided self is the person who doesn't really believe all the things we hear and say.
How do you know this by technique? First,
I was here the first night after the Rathiatra.
Yeah.
I came here.
Good, yes. Right. And then we said goodbye at the evening. Yes, I remember. Yes. Oh. Yeah. Nowadays one never knows because there are the new technical adventures. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said, don't just bring the number one to the japa retreat, bring the number two as well. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know what you meant by bring the number two, and what do we do when we bring the number two?
Yeah. So now comes a volcano. Okay?
Number one says yes. Number two says, let's see what this is.
I think one of the verses things which we can do in our spiritual life is to pretend to be someone we are not. That is, to think we are only number one and pretend the number two is not there. If we do that for some time, if we do that, people will believe us, but Krishna won't believe us, and he will bring us into a situation where all of a sudden we are confronted with our deepest desires, which we really want to hide. which we want to pretend they are not there, which we never work on, which we never confront, which we never look at. Our Krishna consciousness can be, if we don't confront number two and purify him, drag him out of the shadow into a secure area where we can work with him, then he will eventually kill us. Because what we repress consistently without dealing and purifying it, that will at one stage, when we least expect it, when we are weak, raise its ugly head and undo us. So what I mean is with number two is that we are aware of him, we are honest about him, at least to ourselves, because we don't want to present him to the world, this guy, and make everyone but sincerely work on him. Understand, for instance, that I am that there is this, that there is this danger in me, there is this attachment. I need to deal with myself in a way that I can slowly purify it. I come from a zone where my leader was a wonderful servant, a wonderful personality, a wonderful leader, but he had not been dealing with number two. And when he was in a physically weak condition, number two came out like anything, because he was not purified. He was repressed, and he was not the light of Krishna consciousness could not touch him, because he had never opened himself up about number two in discussions with devotees. He had never searched earnestly for help from devotees. He had kept him in the closet, and then bang, he all of a sudden exploded. I'm speaking here about not being a pretender. That is what I'm speaking about. Now, I'm very, very, very aware that let me say it like this. Now, how do we purify number two? That's the essential question. First of all, we have to acknowledge that he is there. And we have to be honest and acknowledge he's still there. And he, we need help from Krishna to purify him. But if we don't purify number two, we will die as a, if I don't purify my number two, I will die as we say in Germany, dirty old man. That means old man who has still so many issues and so many desires, and he will be reborn despite of his exalted dress in a situation where he will have to confront these desires and so on. So I believe very strongly, and I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur addressed that in Krishna Sanghita, that you see there are these anattas going on in your heart, and you pray to Krishna sincerely that he purifies them. They are compared to be like demons. They're very strong. There is no... So just ignore and pretend they are not there will not serve us. They are there. Then they are very strong, like a Keshios and a Putana and a Bakasura, and I mean really significantly. It's childish to think they are not there. When Krishna sees his devotees praying to him, and he thinks this devotee is an honest soul, he will be able to I will give him his mercy. My mercy, my mercy. This is what I mean. I know it is a touchy subject, and I'm struggling with the subject, but, you know, when you are 40 years in the process, and you give your best, and then you still see, there is this thing, the desire for fame, for instance, or the desire for prestige, and it gives you trouble. Now, what are you going to do with about it? Are you just satisfied? Are you just believing that automatically it will disappear eventually? I think by now one should think, okay, let's look. What is it exactly? Let me open the closet. Why is it there? And so on. And then let the light of Krishna consciousness shine on it. And I have done this over the past years and found great, great, great benefit. Great, I see how things dissolve now, which I previously didn't dare to look at and confront. And do you know why they dissolve? It's not because of my own strengths. I'm too weak. I'm a conditioned soul. These materialistic anattas are their life after life after life. Just a few knowledge of a few verses won't drive them away. I sincerely have to turn to Krishna. And the question is really, which comes back from Krishna. At least I feel like this. Wait a minute, you are telling me I should take this away. Do you really want it? And I think, of course, you know, we have our philosophy. No, no. The question is, are you really prepared to become a humble devotee without any prestige and honor? And then I have to scratch my head. And I begin to understand, while my lips say, I want to be pure, my heart says, but not just now, please. I like these things if I'm very honest and so on. And this is the situation of a conditioned soul who's divided. I'm praying every day. I have a prayer which addresses these things, and as I pray this now for 1 year, I really want to become free from all these things. It's really, I don't like it. And then it goes very fast. No, this is too private. You want me to share my deepest material? The prayer. Samsara sagara nato putra mitra griha kulat gaptaro me yuvam eva papana bhaya vanjano. 5 verses. They are from the Sanat Kumar Sanghita, and it says anyone who prays these 5 verses will be guaranteed to do direct devotional service to the divine couple. And where is it? It's in a prayer. I don't know. Yeah, Mahanidhi Maharaj mentions them, but I don't know if he has the Sanskrit. We have published a book, Chanting from the Heart, and I think there is. If you want to have it, yeah, please give it to me. Or can you look with your glasses? Yeah. Yeah, if we, they are on the computer of Mahamaya. you can, Yeah, with the Sanskrit. 20, page 25, or I think it's 25, huh? And Mahamaya, you can go to Mahamaya. Mahamaya, you can get your email. She takes your email address and then sends it to you. That's the best. You could give it to Purusha Shukdas. Yes, somehow. And I must tell you, when you let it out, when you really are ready to see, I know, there's something, there's so many things in me, and you open it and it comes out, then you need a protected area so that it doesn't run all over the demon, you know, and mess up your whole life, your public life and your everything, you know, what you have carefully tried to establish in devotional service. So you let it out in a protected area and the animal will bite. Number two will bite and scream. It's the end of him. Oh, it's terrible. Like Ravindra Swarup, he always says, when he went on the 64 rounds chanting for 1 month, he all of a sudden, he says, he felt a sense of discomfort. And he wanted to find out, why am I not liking it? And he understood, it's the ego revolting against it. You put Krishna now in the center, but what's about me? You know, and so on. So yes. But by this prayer, I can only say, I pray it now since so many, I don't know, a year or so, my life goes very, and I lose the stuff. Really, things are going away. I thought, this is not possible for me. It seems as if something in my genetic codexes changes by this prayer, you know, and the deep conditionings are coming out. I see them and they seem to go away. Not by my own strength. It's not possible. These real anattas are too intense. We are not speaking about the children's stuff, you know. Not to eat sweets or, you know, that everyone can do, you know, control, no cream cheese for 1 week, you know, or 1 month, you know. Anyway, it's not a problem. Good. This is what I would like to contribute to your self. Those who want can go. And no one will think it's number two who... I was worried, yeah. Yeah, well, what should we do? I know Dulal Chandra's hand went up very urgently, isn't it?
Just in relationship with what you're speaking.
Yeah.
If you could just reconcile that with Bhaktivinoda's discourse on
Vyanata.
Krishna killing all the demons except for the ones.
Yeah.
Balaram.
Yeah.
And Balaram is our, those demons are our primary responsibility. And the rest we have to leave to Krishna. Now, I understand you're talking psychologically to bring them out means Krishna take
them. Or Balaram. Yeah. Yes, I don't. I see, in the list of anattas, which are there, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that two anattas, we approach Balaram. We make an effort, but we also we approach Balaram. It's Pralamba Sura, that is material lust, and Denuka Sura, which is the burden with material knowledge and to the exclusion of spiritual knowledge, doubts in other words, which come from material perspective. These two demons, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we should make an effort and to work on these and pray to Balaram to change them. Now, for all practical purposes, this is now what I was giving. I was giving a general answer that we need help from above. Now, how this help from above looks like is explained in a more specific context. But I would say, if you go to Balaram and ask for help, or you ask Krishna for help, in a general sense, you are asking still for superior help. You can't do it alone. So therefore, I think the idea remains the same, that you need to acknowledge what is there and then pray for divine help. Yes, so if you for these two things, lust and doubts due to material knowledge, you go to Balaram, or you make an effort, your effort, whatever you can do, but then you pray to Balaram or Krishna Balaram for help. And I always like to give this example, which I have heard from Radhanath Maharaj. He was living in Man Mandir with Ramesh Baba, and at that time you wouldn't be able to subtract something from your body on the hill itself, because it's a holy hill. So what you would do is you would go to the foot of the hill and then you would answer nature's call there. So once in the night, Radhanath Maharaj needed to quickly answer nature's call and went down in the hill, and halfway he saw two eyes glaring at him. There was a tiger or lion, some wild cat there, and they made the sound. And I don't know if ever you heard a cat, wild cat, making the sound to you. You just run and run and run. So he ran up and said to Ramesh Baba, who was lying on this cot just next to Radhanath Maharaj. He had his cot here and Ramesh Baba there. They were sleeping in the fresh night air because they wanted to have the cooling breeze. He was saying to Ramesh Baba, "Baba, tiger, tiger." And then Ramesh Baba, half asleep, grabs under his bed and produces a little stick and says, "I have stick." Radha Maharaj says, "What will stick do for tiger?" Then Ramesh Baba, now fully awake, says, "I do my best. Let Krishna do the rest." You know, he says, "I make my effort, but to be successful against the tiger, let Krishna..." Krishna needs to do that, you know. So I think this is a good formula. Give our best and then pray to Krishna and Balaram in some cases. And then by the divine strength, which something can happen. See, we are all small capitalists. We cannot do any business in the spiritual world. We need the investment of the spiritual world to increase our capital, then we can start acting and doing. Mm-hmm.
But it seemed that Thakur was saying that there's more responsibility on our part for those anarthas that follow on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. That's true. That's true. Well, you know, when you have lusty issues, you need to control the senses a little. You know, otherwise you will never. And then pray. If you don't do some sense control there, and some eye control, and some this, or if you have so many doubts, you need to read in the Shastras and so on. But still, for the ultimate thing, you do need divine help.
A little bit more,
yes. You need to work. Certain diseases, the patient needs to do more on his side, and that, like for instance, there are these liver connected diseases. There you need to really fast, you know. And not eat cream cheese. And I have no liver problem, by the way. So you need, there are some diseases where you really require to do some extra amount of effort, you know. Good. Thank you very much. Your questions are very, I can see this. You are really informed about the details of the philosophy. It's very nice that you ask these questions, because they bring out more details, and therefore are evoking something which is good for the practical life of a sadhaka. Mm-hmm. Good. But now, yes. This is a question for Giriraj Maharaj. I would really like to hear from you. Do we know that we do our best? And what is our best? And where are the limits of our best? And
well, I'm thinking of that saying of that you should work as if everything depended on you, and pray as if everything depended on God.
You should work and then?
Work as if everything depended on you,
mm-hmm.
and pray as if everything depended on God.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
I think again, there's different ways of working. In other words, one way is, say, more positive, offenseless chanting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other, not negative, but the other is more to actually, confront it, see it for what it is, and ultimately repudiate it.
Reject. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when you know when you're thinking of it, you can get so preoccupied with it that it takes you away from our primary activities of chanting and hearing and serving. So, like everything, we have to be introspective, and at a certain stage we make a determination,
mm-hmm.
that, okay, I've gone as far as I can with this. I can't go any further now. It's up to Krishna. And if I spend all my time trying to deal with this, then where will I have time to chant and hear and spread the movement? Sometimes you just have to make a decision. And also pray to Krishna that, you know, I want to do my best under the circumstances. It seems this is what I could do, and, you know, but if you feel I can do more, then somehow let me know that you think I can do more. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let me know what more I can do. And so much has to do with sincerity. There was a time, sort of earlier when I joined, I would pray to the deities. I live in the temple and I prayed to the deities for guidance. And quite often I would get answers, but sometimes I wouldn't get answers. And when I didn't get an answer, I would always think, oh, well, Krishna's not giving me the answer because he doesn't think I'll follow the instruction if he gives it to me. So then I have to look within myself, you know, what is it? You know, I'm asking for the answer. I'm asking for an instruction, but am I really prepared to follow the instruction? And then I'd work on that and try to bring myself to the stage where I really would follow the instruction, no matter what. But somehow when we get older, we seem to have more conditions. Like one of my god brothers said that when he was younger, he would pray to Krishna, please take away all of my material attachments. But now he prays, please take away all my material attachments, whatever it takes. But now he prays, please take away my material attachments, but be gentle. Or, no, please take away my material attachments, but gradually. And maybe when we were younger, we were more zealous or more naive or more resilient, more blessed by Prabhupada's physical presence. Maybe you can comment on this question of sincerity. It's not even just a question of sincerity. Well, it may be a question of sincerity. It might also be a question that we're more aware of our own sort of, I mean, this might be Maya, but, you know, more aware of our own human frailty. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And realize that I don't know, but I'm sure you get the sense of it too. Would you like to comment?
It may have to do something with humility also, that we begin to understand as we are older, we see our weaknesses and we recognize them. We can see them more easier, and whereas when we are young, we are just flying over everything.
Yeah, I think another thought that just came to me when you said that is that in medicine, for the doctor to perform an operation, the patient has to be strong enough. Sometimes the patient is too weak to endure the surgery. So then first the doctor has to sort of bring the patient to the stage where he's strong enough to endure the surgery. Mm-hmm. So Or sometimes it's just, it's like too late. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the patient's too weak, too old for mm-hmm. surgery, so then it's just other things, you know, maybe more gradual and less invasive, less traumatic. Those could be legitimate reasons. There could also there can also just be lack of sincerity, but there could also be legitimate mm-hmm. reasons.
I like these japa retreats very much for many reasons, but one reason is that as we chant extra rounds and we hear more about Krishna, we genuinely experience that our deepest desires turn to Krishna. I think therefore they are very, very helpful in no matter which situation we are, we are young devotees or if we are old devotees. I remember we had one japa retreat in Mendla. You were not there, Giriraj Maharaj, but many older devotees were there. Dravida was there, Amoga, Leela was there, Yadubara was there, Archana Siddhi, you were there in Kanamrita. He wasn't there. Yeah. And somehow it became such a cathartic experience that all the old devotees were just crying. And they were saying, for the first time I understand what Krishna consciousness is all about. They made such the exclamations, including Dravida Prabhu, who is sober-minded, you know. And Yadubara was behind the camera, and he was always wiping his ears, his eyes. And I was asking him afterwards, some dust came in your eye? No, I'm so emotional, I'm so... But Yadubara, you are dry as a stick usually. yes, I know, but emotions came to me, you know. I feel these things are necessary. We need to be touched as older people. And then, because, yes, as Giriraj Maharaj, as Indrani says, it's really different when you are in a body which is a little shy of 65, it's really different from being 18, you know, and being running and jumping in the kirtan, and after the kirtan you fall on the floor, boy, and that was a good kirtan, you sleep right there, and you jump up at 3 o'clock, my God, I can't tolerate this sleep any longer. When is Mangal Arati? Oh, another hour, no, I jump up now and go rush into the shower. What shower, Prabhu? Cold, of course. And then you have a mind which says, oh my God, my gums are receding. What is the future of my teeth? You know, and you deal with such problems. You know, and then you develop some weak thoughts. You know, then you're worried. You're getting anxiety. What if all the gums are gone? You know, what will I do? Get one of these artificial teeth? This I don't have the money to buy this. You know, and you think like this. And this is therefore, my dear devotees, young as you are, good energy, Hari Prasad, Jai Radhe, teeming with energy, you know, just jump into sadhan and so on. That's very important. We old guys are most probably only here because we have done that, you know, but now we have also, the mind is, oh, becoming, and I, with me it's just starting. I'm a little shy of 55 only. But here, devotees, Giriraj Maharaj has 10 years more. So his, in his ornamentation of years, you know, and it's just starting. Indrani, I can only imagine what it means to be 84. 83. What's the difference? Yes. But then we need elderly people. They have something. They need spiritual exposure. They need to be very. They don't have to rest only on their laurels. And when I was young, yes, no, we old elderly people need to take extra care. Therefore, in spiritual cultures, elderly people are supposed to chant more, read more. But in our movement, of course, we have one other things which elderly people can do, service. Prabhupada trained us very much in service up till the end, until the wheels fall off our car, you know. And that is very good. That is very necessary to become a selfless servant. And to help the young ones with the wisdom and the experiences and so on. That is, in other words, I want to say, yes, I think your thought about when we are old, yes, we deal with our existence in this world a little differently than we dealt with our existence in the world when we were young. I know you were known. I think Srila Prabhupada noticed that you had not enough shirts, and he took care of you to have enough shirts and everything. I have heard in I think Prabhupada Lilamrita, and your wealthy parents could see, wow, our son, our talented son is living so austere, and they were concerned of them. Prabhupada guaranteed that you would get sandesh for good strength. he gave this promise to your parents. Giriraj Swami will get sandesh. I will make sure that he for good strength.
That's true.
Yes, Giriraj Maharaj was nursed by Srila Prabhupada. So you were a little bit very austere, and Prabhupada had to take care of you.
But what instruction he gave me that I forgot about for many years and then only fairly recently remembered? Because I had that tendency to push myself and not take care of myself. And Prabhupada saw it, so he said, to work very hard for 2 days and then to have to recuperate for 3 days, that is not a very good policy. Mm-hmm. So, to be mindful of the body sometimes as well, otherwise can be repercussions.
Govinda, senses of everybody but mine. It seems like that knocking at Krishna's doors requires this boldness or courage. I think you mentioned that also. The courage is required in order to deal with our truant mentality to get us out of that, to intercept that mentality. So what are the downsides of that, knocking at Krishna's door in bold? I mean, we know gopis, they even kind of go an extra mile and they chastise it. But that is done in certain moods. So what are there downsides of that kind of boldness and requesting of Krishna's mercy or requesting this divine intervention? Are there dangers in that?
I first of all want to say I know that you meant the right thing, but of course Krishna can control Krishna can control everyone's mind and senses, but the devotee sometimes says, please do it in my case also, like that. So yes, the question is, what are the downsides of making such a bold prayer to Krishna, that Krishna, you kindly take care of me, and if you don't do this, I will be lost. I think a possible danger could be that we don't give our best effort, you know, and we expect Krishna to take everything in our hands. You know, for instance, with these two anattas, lusty desires, if we don't, you know, if we pray to Krishna, but at the same time continue eating everything and anything and doing anything and everything, then that wouldn't be good. We need to give our best effort, really. That is always there, our own effort and Krishna's mercy. And I think as long as we are here, that we do our best effort as far as we can go, then we will never do anything wrong. It's just like, you know, I have heard in India, when the life member preachers went to the rich to enroll them, then the rich people would say, yes, I will become your life member if Krishna makes that desire strong in my heart. You know? The Indians have such a proud ways of excusing themselves from their responsibility to... I don't know if I have answered your question, but this is as good as my own efforts to give an answer can bring me. In other words, that's as good as I can do. Mm-hmm. Is it good? Is it? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
I think so. Yes.
Is japa then, I mean, it doesn't seem right to me, but is japa to be considered a practice for purification only? Is it an auxiliary practice? Or is japa just as intrinsic, just as sacred, just as powerful as the others? Or is it really a practice to purify our hearts,
mm-hmm.
and an auxiliary practice?
I would like to turn this question to Giriraj Maharaj, because you spoke about these more perfect, more and most perfect. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I quite caught the question.
Are we chanting japa to purify our hearts as a remedial practice so that our hearts will be more pure when we do the real practice of sankirtan? Or is japa just as sacred, just as intrinsic as kirtan and sankirtan?
I would say just as sacred, just as intrinsically worthy. It's again, our goal is to please Krishna, and there's no stereotyped way of pleasing Krishna. What pleases Krishna depends on what we want to offer him and what he wants us to offer him. You know, sometimes one's health doesn't allow him to do loud kirtan or public sankirtan. So then one takes shelter of the holy name in japa. And that may, under those circumstances, please Krishna more. But service, in a way, it's like the question of service and chanting. By, you know, when we chant, we pray to engage in service, and so the chanting can empower us in service. But at the same time, by rendering service and pleasing our superiors, we get their mercy to chant better. So the two reinforce each other. They're not mutually exclusive, but they reinforce each other. So the same would be with japa and kirtan, and yeah, they all support each other.
Chant good japa, and we have the potency and the purity to change other people when they go off, when they do sankirtan. And japa is for personal purification.
That's certainly true. But again, if you go out and chant and sankirtan, you'll chant better japa. Yeah.
This should probably be the last question.
Otherwise,
Krishna Shukla would be very upset with us.
The question is that this Haridas Thakur deity here, he's chanting with his hand, with his beads on his heart. He's chanting with his beads on his heart, and I have that old picture of the six Goswamis at home, and they're all doing this.
Yes. The question is, how are we to understand that Haridas Thakur has his hand while he chants on his heart, and also the beats on his heart? Is this putting the hand and the bead back on the heart, is it part of our tradition? Rukmini says she has also seen pictures of the six Goswamis doing it. The way I would approach this, we were not, as far as I know, we were not specifically taught by Srila Prabhupada to do this. But if it helps, why not do it sometimes? I think the idea is you become more aware of the heart space where when you touched your heart, that's part of meditational technique. They sometimes touch the heart, or there as some people greet themselves, sadhus in India greet themselves by first touching their heart and then extending like this a greeting, you know. It's something to which they do to ground themselves or connect themselves or anchor themselves with the heart. I think it is a gesture which the Indian Kavas of Haridas Thakur, this is, I think the first one who came up with the Haridas Thakur Murti was someone from Jagannath Puri, who took parts of the branch, the Siddha Bakuli branch, and made Haridas Thakurs. And of course, being an Indian, he could only think of doing this the Indian way. What I always think is, put the externals aside and go to the essence. That's how I approach always life. I think that was a little bit how Prabhupada, he made it very, very simple. He didn't get caught up with so many cultural details, but he taught really the essence of pure devotional service, everything for the pleasure of Krishna. That is, please Krishna, that is the mood which we learn from Prabhupada. But if it should help us to move occasionally the hand to the heart, I would say, why not? But I wouldn't make a fad out of it. ISKCON is so susceptible to fads and fashions, it's embarrassing. Like this. Mm-hmm. Is that any comment? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not related to that, but just something that I found interesting. There's footage of Srila Prabhupada chanting japa in his quarters in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
You might have seen him as just walking and chanting, pacing back and forth. Yadubara told me that Prabhupada stopped him from filming him. He didn't want to be filmed. And if you look closely, what Yadubara did to make it longer is he spliced the same footage together. I don't know, I just thought it was interesting that Prabhupada stopped him from filming him at that stage.
Why do you think he did so? He didn't want... Was it an intrusion in his private space? Yeah. Or
I took it like that. Shruti Kirti Prabhu also told me sometimes Prabhupada would dismiss him. And he felt that Prabhupada just wanted that time to be alone with Krishna. Like we would imagine that Prabhupada was there just for us. That he had nothing to do, nothing better to do than just be with us. And Shruti Kirti Prabhu felt sometimes he just wanted to be alone with Krishna in his own mood, and he just didn't want us around.
No problem. Good. So thank you very much for outlasting, staying with us. But time is also there.
4 o'clock, we'll have Radharani and my mantras, next discussion.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Krishna.
There's prasadam again.
One question I have, a wasp stung me, and I have No problem. I have taken lemon. Does any one of you have the super anti-vas balm? Can I have? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tilak, okay. Good. Okay, thank you very much. I wish you a good lunch, and little rest is required after lunch, and then 4 o'clock. Hare Krishna.